If it's significant services, it's a short-term rental, but it's reported on Schedule C, subject to self-employment tax. If it's not significant services, then it's reported on Schedule E along with your long-term rentals. The depreciation life in both of those situations would be 39 years.
You're listening to 5-Hour Real Estate Week, where you'll learn to consistently buy real estate in only 5 hours a week. So if you're ready to invest in real estate, achieve financial freedom, and own the lifestyle you deserve, even with your job, this is the show for you. Now, here's your host, Mike Butler.
Okay, hello and welcome to another episode of the 5-Hour Real Estate Week. I'm Mike Butler, your host, and today's topic is, I believe we're in part four of a six-episode series on tax updates for today's real estate investor. And we're blessed to have Eric Shadowin, CPA. He's your real estate tax guy. And I've had lunch with Eric. I've met with him. We've had phone calls. We've banged over a lot of stuff. And I tell you what, this guy's pretty daggone sharp. And I've learned more from him in the last 6 or 12 months, I guess maybe the last 5 years combined or more. And very fast, I'm learning new stuff from him all the time. So he's got a free gift for you at the end of today's episode. So stay tuned for that. And we're going to talk about short-term rentals with Eric. And I'll just turn, there you go, Eric. Welcome aboard, buddy.
Thanks for having me, Mike. So short-term rentals, I've been working with clients over the last couple of years. And I'll even mention, I work with probably over 90% of my clients are real estate investors or realtors. I specialize in real estate tax accounting, and it's my passion. When I go home, I don't quit working. I go home, and it's my hobby at home. I like to read and learn about real estate. So,
except fishing.
Yeah, with my real estate book. I have clients that have, I work with flippers, wholesalers, landlords, private lenders, and realtors. And recently, you know, the short-term rental boom has just been insane. And I thought it would be a good topic to talk about because on the tax side, short-term rentals are treated differently sometimes. And it matters on how you treat your short-term rental. How you treat it is how you're going to be taxed, and you could be taxed in a different way. So to start off, let's just give you a first example. If you went out and you purchased a property and you are turning it into a short-term rental, what sort of significant services are you going to offer your guests? So if you have a concierge service, if you have maid services where they come in and they clean the unit every day for the guest, if you're offering like a continental breakfast, some sort of lunch, if you have a transportation service that you offer to take your guests back and forth from the events that they want to go to, that's a significant service. And if you're offering significant services, think hotel-like services, then you're going to be taxed not on as a rental property. If you're a sole proprietor, not on the Schedule E of your return. You actually, that activity is reported on the Schedule C of your return, and you're subject to self-employment tax. So if you have, and in a lot of cases, short-term rentals are killing it because everybody right now, up until the beginning of this year, we'll say, we don't know what it's going to be like going forward with the market, but a lot of folks are out there traveling and they want to see the world. If you're providing them significant services, you're going to be subject to not only the, if your income falls into the ordinary income tax bracket, let's just say you're 22%, but let's also realize that you're going to be subject to self-employment taxes. That's 15.3%. So just a quick idea, you know, if your net income is $100,000, you're potentially paying up to $40,000 in just federal tax alone. There's other conditions that can help beat that number down, but let's just use that as the example. I have a client that when he first got into this here in Louisville, you might think of the Kentucky Derby or you might think of the Bourbon Trail. So he was telling me about the short-term rentals he was doing. And that was my question because he was killing it. And I was like, well, what are you doing? How are you advertising? You know, what is it? The Bourbon Trail? Is it the Derby? He said, no. He said, a lot of my business is just individuals coming in to see Louisville. And again, that's Louisville, not Louisville, Louisville. Well, just want to point that out.
That's how we identify tourists.
Accountants have humor too. So nevertheless, he was telling me that as an example, he had two young ladies that was staying at one of his properties for the week. They were in from California and they came specifically to Louisville just to check it out. They were working during the day remotely, and then they were going out on the town at night just to see what Louisville was like. That is how some short-term rentals are working right now. He didn't offer them significant services, so we don't have to worry about the tax side of that part of it. But then the question is, how does that get treated? If you're not offering significant services, you have a short-term rental, your activity is going to be reported. If you're just a small LLC, you don't have a partnership, it's going to be reported on the Schedule E of your personal return, along with, if you have long-term rentals, it's all going to be reported there on the Schedule E. So you think, well, you're done. You don't have to worry about it anymore, but you do. And hopefully this is where it is helpful to have an experienced tax advisor that works in real estate, because someone like that will be able to catch the differences between what a short-term rental and a long-term rental is. And let me explain that. You may have be aware of the real estate professional exception. Let's say that you are a W-2 worker and you have a couple of rental properties and you have some big losses. Let's see, a combined $50,000 of paper losses on your long-term rentals. And let's say your W-2 income is above $150,000. You may not be aware of this, but there's, when you have losses in rental properties, the loss, the actual rental property, is automatically considered a passive activity. Passive activity only allows passive income and passive losses to be netted together. And if there's remaining passive losses, it remains passive activity. It stays in a bucket all by itself. And there's two ways, generally, there's other ways, but there's two main ways to free up that passive loss, that passive activity, to be able to net it against your W-2 income. One would be the small landlord exception. And what that says is you can deduct up to $25,000 worth of losses, rental losses, against your non-passive income, which is like your W-2 income, if your income, your gross income, is less than $100,000, not including that $25,000 loss.
Okay.
Going back to my example, you're above $150,000, you don't meet that exception. So the other exception is the real estate professional exception. And what that says is, if you work 750 hours a year in a real estate activity, and more than 50% of your time is spent in a real estate activity, then you meet the real estate professional exception. Let's go back to the $150,000 W-2 job you have. Let's just say, for the heck of it, you do that in 1,000 hours. And let's say that you have enough long-term rentals that you have 1,001 hours spent in those rental activities. And that's greater than 50% of your W-2 time. So you meet the real estate professional exception. But there's one additional hurdle to be able to take the losses from your rental activity and free all the losses up against your W-2 income. And that is, you have to materially participate in your rental activity. There's seven different tests to materially participate. The three easiest ones to remember are: substantially all your time is spent in your rental activity, you spend 100 hours and more than anybody else in your rental activity, or you spend 500 hours in your rental activity. That's all I'm going to talk about long-term rentals. We're going to pass on the rest of that conversation because there's a much deeper conversation that needs to be had, even the documentation of it. But now let's get back to short-term rentals. I felt it was necessary to understand that, because if you have a short-term rental, you don't have to meet the real estate professional exception. You don't necessarily have to work 750 hours, and you don't have to spend more than 50% of your time in a real estate activity. All you have to do in your short-term rental is materially participate. So if you have one short-term rental and you do all the work for that short-term rental, and you have a $50,000 loss, we'll say for now, because that could be accomplished with the cost segregation for sure, you could take that $50,000 loss and offset your W-2 income. But if you have a property manager, all that's going to be thrown out the door, because the property manager is doing all the work for you. So you likely will not be able to materially participate with the property manager.
Wow. Okay. Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Okay. So on short-term rentals, this is all brand new stuff to me as far as the tax side of it. So if you have significant use where you offer amenities, right?
Yep.
Then you're not going to use Schedule E, you're going to use Schedule C.
Yes.
And it's going to be treated as a business, basically.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. If that happens, do you lose depreciation as well?
No.
So you'll still be depreciating
your building and everything. Yep. It's still an asset.
Okay. So you don't lose depreciation. That part's good. Okay. So is there a limit on the number of significant uses to avoid Schedule C?
It's a case-by-case basis, and there isn't perfect guidance on what is a certain amount of significant expenses. But what I would tell a client is the least amount that you can offer is the best route. So I always tell my clients, you know, you want the client or the guest showing up to your short-term rental and they're independent and they're doing their own thing. You don't want to be offering them a lot of services, because the more services, definitely the more argument the IRS will have. That's more of a Schedule C type business than it is a Schedule E type business.
Let me give you one example. The city I lived in before, next door neighbor was renting her home out on a VRBO, Airbnb or whatever, and they weren't screening their people properly. And they basically had some kind of family reunion. They had a big old speakers and DJ. I mean, you could hear it for three blocks. And so the city council received all kinds of complaints. So they drafted an ordinance that says no short-term rentals. Rentals have to be over 30 days. And if it's less than 30 days, you have to provide a meal for them every day. So in order to comply with the city ordinance, they then started, like, I don't know, Subway, order Subway, they could this and that to comply with the city ordinance. Would that be considered a significant use?
Well, I think you have a couple things going on there, and I don't think I explained that in the beginning. A short-term rental for tax purposes is considered 7 days or less. And then if it's, that's when you're deciding between the Schedule C and Schedule E. And then also there's a 30-day rule in there that might throw it onto the Schedule C as well. Anything above the 30 days, now you're just talking about, it's going to be more just like a long-term rental. So kind of going back to your question, that's a service. And the more services you offer, the worse condition you're going to be in being treated as that operating business on the Schedule C. One may not do it, and it might just be, if you get audited by the IRS, it's up to that agent, and it's what kind of argument you can provide. But certainly, the more services that you have, you're weakening your argument that it's not subject to that self-employment tax on a Schedule C.
Yeah, it's the same arm wrestling match on being a dealer. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
At least there's a guideline for that, and it's still not for the dealer. You know, you've got the Winthrop factors where there's, like, I think it's seven different facts and circumstances tests that you go through, and it has to do with the intent and the number, but that's a whole different topic that has nothing to do with short rentals, but it's kind of like that.
Okay. So you got on here, what is the asset life of a short-term rental? So is that the depreciation schedule?
Yes. And that's important when, especially if you're a do-it-yourselfer, or if it's a tax advisor that may not deal with real estate tax often enough, a short-term rental is residential. But for tax purposes, it's depreciated. You know, a residential property is normally depreciated over 27 and a half years, but a short-term rental is actually depreciated over 39 years.
Ooh, so if you, a short-term rental, if you have significant use and you're doing Schedule C, you do get depreciation, but now it's flagged commercial. So you got to use 39 years.
And even on the Schedule E, even if it's not significant services, it's still a short-term rental and it's on the Schedule E, but it's still going to be depreciated over 39 years because it's a short-term rental.
Okay. So is it wrong to do this? Okay. I know that there's a ton of investors out there, and I would be one of them, where, hey, this would be a great short-term rental. I just don't want the headache. Okay. But this is going to be a short-term rental, and as far as I'm concerned, it's an investment property. It's a rental property. So I would do all my tax stuff or whatever and just report on my short-term rental income as rental income for that property and do Schedule E. That, you're saying that's wrong.
If your average guest stay is less than 7 days and you're providing significant services and you're putting it on the Schedule E, you would have an issue. Is that what you're asking me?
I'm trying to get some clarification on, can you report all your short-term rental income as rental income on Schedule E and treat it just like a long-term rental?
Well, let me back up here. Let's go back to the significant or not significant services. If it's significant services, it's a short-term rental, but it's reported on Schedule C, subject to self-employment tax. If it's not significant services, then it's reported on Schedule E along with your long-term rentals. The depreciation life in both of those situations would be 39 years.
Holy cow. Okay. And I guess you could still do cost segregation on that.
Absolutely. And that's the part where you want to watch out, because we're talking about cost segregation recently. You want to do cost segregation if it makes sense to you. And if you're allowed to, anybody could do a cost segregation. But if you're passive, those losses get suspended. You've spent money on a cost segregation and you didn't get a benefit out of it. So going back to the material participation part on that short-term rental, treated differently than your long-term rentals. If you do a cost segregation and you materially participate in that short-term rental and you generate a decent loss, that loss can be immediately freed up and reduce any W-2 or non-passive type income that you have.
Okay. You said at the very beginning of this episode, short-term rentals are a hot potato now. Everybody and their brother wants to do it. You know, they say that you can double and triple your cash flow, your income, and all this and that. What people talk about is awesome, but I've never heard this side of the IRS involvement in short-term rentals. So this could be an eye-opener. Wow. So if you have a property management company, if you hire a property management company to oversee your short-term rentals, that's a business.
Well, no, where the property manager comes in is this. And this gets into documentation and logging your time, which in presentations I give, I'll pull out a engagement letter that I just get off the internet, but it's an engagement letter that, you know, even similar to what our firm might use preparing or advising clients in the tax world. And in that engagement letter, there's three different references about the client, the taxpayer, required to be providing good and accurate records, keeping their records, and being able to substantiate and document if they ever got audited. And the question I always ask when I give that presentation is, how often or how many times or have you ever had that type of conversation with your tax advisor? So I guarantee you, in a lot of cases, that conversation is never had. So you go back to your question, when you're keeping track of your rental properties, whether it is long-term or short-term, there's a requirement for you in order to meet the real estate professional exception or in order to meet this material participation. It's not just clicking a box on a return. It's not just treating it a certain way on a return. The more to it part is you should be keeping track and logging your hours that you keep during the year. And what I mean by logging your hours is if you have a short-term rental and you're over there repairing a window and it takes you 4 hours, you're keeping a log of that. And if you get audited and the IRS agent, the first thing they're going to ask you for, like in a good situation, if you've claim that you materially participate in your rental activities, you meet that real estate professional exception, the very first thing they're going to ask for is your log. And I like to get into tax court cases. I love reading them. I can't read code, but I love reading court cases because it describes the code, Internal Revenue Code. So if you read court cases, there's a billion court cases regarding taxpayers who lost trying to claim the real estate professional exception or trying to claim material participation. And the number one reason they lose because they couldn't show documentation that they actually did what they were saying they did on their return. They couldn't support their position. So where the property manager comes into this, if you're saying you materially participate in the short-term rental, materially participating means that you're spending 100 hours, you're spending 500 hours substantially all the time. That means you're over there fixing windows. You're over there cleaning the carpet. You're doing something to that property. You're logging that time, and that's how you're reflecting that you materially participate. It's almost impossible to materially participate with the property manager because they're doing everything you should be doing. They are the landlord. They're screening tenants. They're hiring contractors. They're doing all the work. You're more of a passive investor, not doing much of anything with your short-term rental or even with your long-term rentals if you have a property manager.
So what's the bottom line? If you have a property manager, odds are, wow, you fall into this category resulting in...
You're going to have a loss. If you have a loss, that is, in your short-term rental, it's going to be a passive loss and it can't be offset with your other income. It can only be offset with passive income.
Okay, but most folks that bump their gums about this they talk about their phenomenal cash flow and how much money they make. What happens in that situation with the property manager?
There's no issues with your cash flow. That has nothing to do with the tax side of it, because when you're looking at your tax return, you're looking at paper losses, because you mentioned in one of our conversations about depreciation, it's somewhat phantom. You're taking an expense for something that, in a way, it's not money coming out of your pocket today. It came out of your pocket another day, but today it didn't come out of your pocket. It's a phantom expense. So with that, when you're looking at the tax return, you have paper losses, but you're still potentially cash flowing. You could still cash flow and have a loss because of...
What's your definition of a paper loss? I'm lost there.
A paper loss would be when you take your rental income and all your operating expenses, including your mortgage interest and your depreciation expense.
Show a negative number.
Negative number. That's a paper loss, because the depreciation expense really isn't something you spent today. That's not a repair expense. That's not an office expense.
But most people doing this, they brag about their... how much money they're making on it. So if you took income minus expenses, they got a positive number.
So to get that number, that's a total different number. To arrive at that number, you're taking your rental income, operating expenses, you come up with your net income, and then you add back your depreciation and any other non-cash type expenses. But you also need to subtract out, you add back your interest expense, but you also subtract out your mortgage payment, the whole mortgage payment. And that is where you get to your cash flow. So you could still have cash flow, but have a loss on your tax return, which is fantastic. That's what makes real estate investing so awesome, because you can make money, earn money, but get to take a loss and potentially offset your non-passive income.
Like Trump did.
Absolutely.
Okay. So we're about to wrap this one up here. So the asset life of a short-term rental is going to be treated commercial, 39 years?
Yeah.
I think most folks are not aware of that. Okay. Especially those that do their own tax returns. And you got on here, how much personal use is allowed? What do you mean by that?
So we kind of talked about the Augusta exemption recently. So personal use, you can use your short-term rental 14 days or less a year, or 10% of the total number of days rented, you can personally use your short-term rental. So think of the vacation that you want to take after a long, hard tax season. You go down to your short-term rental and you stay there for a week. That's okay. If you're there more than 14 days a year, or more than 10% of the total number of days rented, then you're not going to be allowed a full deduction. There's going to be a calculation to back out your personal use before you can arrive at the deductible expenses.
Kind of prorated.
Yes.
Okay. Back to the material participation. I've got a simple solution for everybody on this. And so Eric's saying you need to document your time. The easiest way to do that, guys, is on your phone. Okay. Is on your phone and use Google Calendar. And so if you're over there, just punch in how many hours or start time, stop time. Yeah, it's a pain in the butt. You want to make sure you're qualified that way and you get those hours in. The other thing, and this is totally off the subject, is I recall saying when it comes to your mileage, you can take a typical week and document that properly, and you can use that ratio for the whole year?
Technically, you're supposed to be documenting it contemporaneously. So as you do it, because you have to actually break down by travel. So you leave your work today, Mike, and you go over to one of your rental properties, you document that and you document the miles, and you're going to document why you're there. And you technically need support to show why you went over there to do it. You got an email from one of the tenants that says your window's broken. You leave your office, you go to Home Depot, you buy supplies, and then you go to that rental property and you fix it. You're keeping track of that mileage that way. And you do it for each time you make a travel, which sounds totally insane, but there's a Mile IQ app that is kind of a swipe, similar to probably maybe Google Calendar, any way that you can track something. In a worst case scenario, here's what I say. What you said, that's a worst case scenario. At least do that. And then be able to reasonably explain that if you ever get audited. So here's the week or the month that I tracked, and I do the same thing for the rest of the year, and have a good explanation of how and why you do it, then that would probably potentially be acceptable. In a perfect world, though, you're tracking every time you travel somewhere to come up with your mileage.
Okay. So short-term rentals, condo on the beach, lake house, this and that. If you use more than what number of days in the year?
14.
So if you use
or 10% of the total rented days.
Okay. If you use it more than 14 days, then you're going to have to prorate the investment benefits and with the IRS. Yep. Okay. I think it wraps this one up. And we went a little bit over as always there, Eric. I want to thank you. And remember, here's a special gift just from Eric Shadowins. Get your free real estate investor consultation at, you can call him at 502-326-2319 or email him at eshadowins@dmlo.com or go to LinkedIn and just do /Eric Shadowins and you'll find him on there and you can reach out, contact him to get your free consultation scheduled. I want to point out that Eric is a CPA. He's a real estate investor himself. He's your real estate investor tax guy. And the IRS operates in all 50 states. Okay. So if you need help, he's your go-to guy. And he's awesome. I'm learning stuff from, as you can tell, in this episode right here. We're going to wrap this one up. And if you're getting started in real estate, go back and listen to episodes 1-10. And that's a big picture on how to get started and what to look for. And I need your help and Eric needs your help. And so if you could click a follow button, a subscribe button, whatever there is to give us a 5-star review, greatly appreciate it. That's how you can reward me and Eric for bringing you this great information. And sign up for the free investor training power lunches I do every Tuesday at noon. Just go to mikeletler.com. Okay, so adios on this one. We'll see you on the next one.
Thanks, Mike.
Glad you joined us for another episode of 5-Hour Real Estate Week. The best thing you can do now is put this information to action. To help you get started, Mike created a free resource for you called How to Buy 50 Houses a Year, Even with Your Job. Download it now by going to mikebutler.com/50houses. And we'll see you on the next episode.